Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to tonight. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests and, of course, later on, the views of our callers, if we ask for any calls. So please hold your calls. I'll give out the telephone numbers, but please don't call in unless we ask for the calls. The number being 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold off calling because we have with us on the line Melody Cedarstrom, and we're going to be talking about what's going on financially. Now, it was about last Friday when Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, gave a talk on the influence of globalism in the world, and he was commenting that certainly we're seeing a tremendous advantage throughout the world as living standards of people throughout the world is increasing, and of course, words must not under any circumstances reverse the process of globalization as we transfer our wealth to other nations. This is good for the rest of the world. But you know, I thought Ben Bernanke was hired to stabilize the American dollar and for the advantage of the people in this country, not for the people of the rest of the world. It's really very revealing as you think about that, and then you remember what Paul Volcker said, and I believe it was August of last year when he was had written an article. No, it was April 10th of last year when Paul Volcker had written an article that appeared in the Washington Post. And after talking about all the dire problems we're going to face, and the fact that we may very well see an economic collapse in this country, he concluded with this statement: "I don't want let stand as an epitaph of what has been an unparalleled period of success for the American economy and of enormous potential for the world at large." Now, what he's talking about, of course, is this massive inflation of the American money supply, and of course the same thing's going on throughout the world. And we've created a tremendous advantage for people in other countries as we have systematically destroyed the economy of the United States, as we've shipped our major industries, our major manufacturing, many of our better jobs to other countries, and opened our borders to highly trained people from other countries who come in here and work at much lower wages. And what we are systematically doing is grinding down the living standards of the average American. And the raises that people are getting today for their employment do not keep up with inflation. The rate of inflation is much higher than the government is telling you. But then why should we believe any government statistics? I mean, isn't that the purpose of government, to deceive the public? Well, with that as a background, Melody Cedarstrom, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me. It's always great to be here.
Well, tell us what your take is on what's going on.
You know, it is amazing when you listen to Ben Bernanke and all the others that their words are only meant to condition the people of this country. And they do a fine job of conditioning a lot of the people out there. And they believe that globalism is something that's wonderful, that's great, and they feel that everybody is prospering perhaps but them. And maybe it is only their own situation or their own purchasing habits that got them into trouble and got them into debt, but I assure you that's happening to a lot of people out there. A report came out today where the wealth gap has widened.
By the wealth gap, you mean the wealth of the very rich.
The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer.
And that is exactly what the plan is. It is to establish a situation such as they have in Mexico today with a number of billionaires and then most of the people impoverished. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Melody Cedarstrom, and we're basically talking about what's happening to the economy. And I don't think most people really grasp the significance of the fact that we have a ruling elite, and of course, Bernanke, Alan Greenspan, certainly Paul Volcker, but both Volcker and Greenspan came from the Trilateral Commission. I don't know where Bernanke comes from, but I'm sure he would not be where he is today if he were not, of course, totally subservient to the ruling class of America, who is intent upon establishing a feudal society. And of course, you know, they manipulate the market up. Why? Why are they keeping the market up? Very, very simply because it is all a matter of perception. When the market is up, we feel good. When the market is down, we feel bad. When gold or silver are up, we feel good. When gold and silver are down, we feel bad. And so they've actually increased the value of these things. They're increasing the value of stocks. At least many of them are not doing too badly, with no justification at all for their pricing, other than the fact that they're being manipulated up. And the free market that we've known in the past really no longer exists. Everything is a matter of perception, and keeping the American people fat and dumb and happy, like the beef cattle that they're getting ready to lead into the slaughterhouse. You don't want them to panic. You just want them to walk up the slot. And I believe me, already started either up or down the slot. I'm not sure which way, but I know where it's going to end if we do not waken the American people to the fact that there is a ruling elite that has a plan, and it does not include the opportunity for people to move up in the world. I think the only thing we're going to do is progressively impoverish the American people. So with that as the background, Melody, you pick up the story.
Well, the people are becoming impoverished, and I think they look upon themselves as perhaps their own situation. I would think that they're getting very tired out there with the interest rates rising on their adjustable rate mortgages. And on this report here where the wealth gap widened, in 2004, 48.6% of households owned some stock, including equity mutual funds in their 401k accounts. But only 35% of stock-owning households had more than $5,000 in stock. That's not a lot of money. The average value of stock holdings was just $7,500 among the middle 20% of households and just $1,400 for the bottom 40%. By contrast, the wealthiest 1% of households owned an average of $3.3 million. And so there you go to see that it's not the people's money that's in the stock market.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Melody Seifstrom, and she's pointing out that the average person has a certain amount of money in the stock market, but not a great deal. The vast majority of the money in the stock market is owned by people of great wealth. Now, I have nothing against people of great wealth.
No.
I think it's wonderful for people to be able to work hard and get ahead in society. The only trouble is that's not the way this society is structured anymore. We have a taxing system which is specifically designed to favor people of great wealth. They tell you, oh, they're paying all the taxes, a few of them are, but most of them have gimmicks and ways to get away from paying massive amounts of taxes and estate taxes and all these other taxes. And the great tragedy is that we no longer have a free and competitive society. We have cartels. We have the government blocking competition. We have the government allowing certain groups to get favored contracts from government, no-bid contracts. And here is a means by which the rich get richer and the poor get poor. Open and free bidding on contracts is one thing. When, of course, Halliburton, which, of course, was Dick Cheney's company, and he had a great deal of stock in that, when Halliburton gets all sort of no-bid contracts from the government, who do you think is really benefiting? The average taxpayer who has to put the money out to pay it into the coffers of Halliburton, which, at least over in Iraq, many times was simply flatly cheating the government, or the taxpayer? Well, go ahead, Melody. I really believe that, I believe in the free enterprise system. I just think we're turning our back on the free enterprise system and we're going towards a feudalistic society.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I thought was also interesting about that, when we talk with gold and when we relate it to gold, I have many clients who, you know, when we discuss the different types of coins and so forth, they always ask, well, who will buy my gold? When you have a falling dollar, who will buy my gold? When everybody is broke, well, there we have it. The wealthiest 1% of households will be the people that will be purchasing gold and silver, because they will want to invest their money as they see the dollar fall. And they're the ones that we're waiting for to get into the market. And they will. When the general populace in the market, when the general populace comes into the market, let me put it that way, that is when we'll really and truly see gold propel to its high levels. So again, those are the people that we want into the gold market.
Now, another
part of this report that I thought was interesting was the one area where the middle and lower net worth households trumped the wealthiest was, of course, debt. Debt levels rose for all groups, exceeding disposable personal income by more than 30% in 2005. But debt for the top 1% only rose 10.6% compared to a 19.5% increase among the middle 20% of households. So, again, we saw, you know, the debt in the lower income households rise substantially over the wealthy. So, again, they've gotten themselves where their homes became their ATM machines, and we're a nation where wealth is based on debt. And again, we're back to the illusion where people might feel prosperous because, you know, they're the gratification people. That, you know, they need to have that gratification immediately. If they want something, they go get it, and they have the credit cards to back them up. So, unfortunately, we've seen that the debt in the lower incomes continue to rise.
Well, I think that what we have to really understand is that so much of our economy is built upon people buying things that they can't afford. And, of course, what's going to happen is the interest rates go up, and they will progressively increase, especially, you know, on your credit cards and on your adjustable rate mortgages. But see, actually, the Federal Reserve Chairman, Alan Greenspan, encouraged people to get into these adjustable rate mortgages. Why would you do that when you know, and Alan Greenspan's a very, very smart man, Alan Greenspan knew that eventually, why these people would have to pay fantastically high interest rates that they would never be able to meet, you know, and not be able to meet their monthly payments, and they would eventually have to give up their homes, and those houses be foreclosed on. In fact, it's my understanding that the incidence of auctions for closed houses is beginning to increase across America. Now, we're not anywhere near as bad as it's going to get. I think we're just beginning to see the market turn down just a little bit, but certainly I think that the number of foreclosures is increasing dramatically all across America. Have you run into that, Melody?
Well, I think you have pockets across this country where you have home foreclosures, as it certainly is, along with foreclosures and bankruptcies. But I think you'll see right now, yeah, we're right on the tip of things beginning to unfold in the housing market. But mainly those pockets will be around where we've had a lot of factories closing, where you perhaps automobile factories closing and other types of manufacturing closed down. Those are the areas that I believe have been hit. They've been hit hard. And, I mean, there's areas where I have customers who bought a property in Indiana where they've bought homes, fairly nice homes, you know, not in good neighborhoods for, you know, $20,000 and $30,000 that should be selling for, you know, maybe $100,000 or $110,000 plus. So, and they purchased these homes in an area where Chrysler moved out, where Chrysler supplied jobs to many people in this area, in these towns. The Chrysler leaves, and the next thing you know, there's no jobs. Then you have businesses boarding up because they can't survive, and the next thing you have people boarding their homes and leaving because they can't find work.
And I think it's sort of interesting that Chrysler is actually cutting back on their SUV and their pickup production because they've had a dramatic decrease in sales. Their the inventory is increasing dramatically. They can't move their vehicles, so they're just going to start shutting down more of their production facilities here in the United States, just exactly as General Motors and Ford are doing. But, of course, they're moving their major production facilities overseas. General Motors is the largest automotive producer in communist China today, the second or third largest in Korea. They're in India, they're in Brazil, they're in certainly in Mexico. Ford is certainly in Mexico, and increasingly moving their production facilities around the world. And the average American has no idea what's really happening. It's called globalization. Much easier to produce there and even bring those same vehicles back into the United States because they can produce them over there at a fraction of what they can produce them for here.
I don't understand why people really can't figure that out because, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out where GM... when they're having difficulty selling vehicles, that they continue to produce and promote and market the high gasoline vehicles, you know, the high dollar end vehicles that take the premium gasoline. And, I mean, it doesn't take anyone with any little bit of brain power to figure out that they should perhaps change their marketing plan if they really wanted to. And it just backs up the theory that they don't want to. They want to move out of this country. And so they will run their companies into the ground in order to give them whatever is necessary to make the move and to move the processing out of this country.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Melody. We have a poor tape set. We call it the New Order of the Barbarians, and it is an interview with a Dr. Dunnigan who practiced pediatrics in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I did one of the interviews, and Randy Engel did the other. It's one of the most amazing tape sets we have because it describes a talk that was given by a Dr. Richard Day, who is the medical director of Planned Parenthood. And back in 1969, and Dr. Day came to talk to a group of physicians, asked them to turn off their tape recorders, not to take notes, and he would tell them about the plan of a group he called the Order. And they were planning, and why this is so apropos, among other things, I mean, they planned to create new diseases and suppress treatments for cancer and, of course, to get abortion legalized in America. This was 1969. Remember, to encourage sexual promiscuity. But one of the things I will never forget, he said, we're planning to actually transfer automotive production to Japan. Specifically so that the people will want to buy Japanese cars, so we will not produce good cars in America, and we will shift production to Japan, so Japan will be primarily producing the cars that are sold in the United States. Now, back in 1969, I'm sure that sounded pretty crazy. But, of course, if you have a GM car today or a Ford, you realize it's nowhere near as good as the Toyota. And, of course, I think there's real problems, but I don't think they're accidental. I agree with you, Melody. I believe that this is part of a grand design, and, of course, Dr. Richard Day told them that these people control the world. He called them the Order, and that basically it was too late to change anything, and the trouble was the American people really didn't care, and they wouldn't care until it was too late.
And that's certainly true, that the American people don't care. And I had some dealings with, it was right when Nissan used to be, what was their name before Nissan? Began with a D, Datsun.
Datsun.
And I was told that on their manufacturing lines, that any employee had a switch, that if they saw something that was wrong, they could shut down the line so that you didn't have any large recalls. Where here in the States, the manufacturing lines, sometimes it would take days. If they saw something that was being manufactured wrong, it would take days and maybe weeks before they could shut down the line. So you had all these vehicles being manufactured and produced that had these faulty parts and so forth.
However, we're going to be back here in just a moment and with Melody Cedarstrom. And if you have a question or comment, give us a call. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927 or 464-8295, right here in the Central Coast of California. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our producer was simply noting that the large SUVs and pickups apparently give a lot more profit to the companies, General Motors and Ford, if they can actually sell them. The trouble is, I think they've had to discount an awful lot of these, to get them sold because they're just not moving as the way they were in the past. And of course, Ford had lost money here in the United States, but they don't mention that they're making money overseas. And that same thing is true with General Motors. General Motors shuffles the books around and tells you how it's losing money in America, but it doesn't tell you all about all the money it's making throughout the rest of the world, because these are no longer American companies. They're global companies like IBM and, of course, Hewlett-Packard and Intel and all the others. They're no longer American. They're part of the global economy. Go ahead, it's Melody.
Well, when we talked about the quality of the vehicles back in 85 and 84, we certainly saw the quality change from the foreign vehicles versus the American vehicles. As far as a long-term plan, it happened, you're absolutely correct, it did happen a long time ago, and this was their plan, and they succeeded. And it's amazing, though, that, of course, if you have an employee with, these are the people that employ you, you're certainly going to support them to some degree, and I'm sure it would be difficult to imagine that, that they were doing this by design. And accepting that is probably a little bit more difficult for them. In fact, when Adelphia, the cable company, went out of business, filed bankruptcy, when you had the fraud committed by the owners of the company, the father and his two sons, a lot of the people in that town still couldn't believe that these people would do that to them. And for a long time after the story was broke, the people that worked for Adelphia in that small town in Pennsylvania, northern Pennsylvania, they felt sorry for them. And until people really started to lose their jobs and they started to lose their homes, did they begin to have ill thoughts about these people that abused and stole from the company and totally changed people's minds.
I think this sort of thing is going on all over the country.
Yes.
And I think that many of the heads of major corporations have no loyalty to this country. Now, our producer had asked the question, how could we force companies to stay in the United States and produce here when they could do it more competitively overseas? And the way you force companies to stay in the United States is you put tariffs on and they can't bring the products into the United States without paying a 10% tariff. The whole purpose of tariffs at the time America was founded was to protect our industry. At the time when America was founded, they wanted America to be a strong manufacturing company, our country. But you have to understand that the elite that controls our country do not have any loyalty to the United States. Their loyalty is to this globalist dream, and they are intentionally and purposely destroying the industrial segment of this country. And as part of a plan, and you can read about it in the Earth Charter, they plan on equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. Their plan is to transfer the wealth of the American people and the American manufacturing companies to other countries throughout the world and impoverish our people here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course my producer says that a tariff should have to be 20-30%, and I say if it has to be 20-30%, then that's what you should do it, because if we lose our manufacturing base in America, we lose our status as a superpower. We lose our status as an industrialized society, and a society that can't produce anything is going to be a very, very poor society. And that is exactly what the elitists really intend. And behind them, of course, the spiritual forces which energize this whole incredible movement. Go ahead, Melody.
But don't you believe that it's a little too late even to place tariffs on? Haven't we lost enough or enough manufacturing already that would the tariffs really protect it enough in order to bring, I mean, it's certainly not going to bring companies back.
Well, I would have to say that, you know, if you have a patient who is bleeding profusely, the first thing you have to do is stop the hemorrhage before you worry about going ahead and taking care of their arm fracture and their leg fracture and the lacerations that they have. You've got to stop the hemorrhaging, and that's what you have to do as far as our industrial production. And we've got to stop losing. And then, of course, I believe, of course, we had high enough tariffs, and we could create a situation where people could, you know, manufacturers could be here without being put out of work by the unions. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that in many instances, the unions have worked in concert with the large manufacturers to discourage competition. And you want to come in, you want to start producing something in the United States, maybe want to produce cars, you can produce a better car cheaper, and they'll make your life miserable. They'll unionize your workers, they'll drive you right out of business. It's a technique that's been used over and over again. Or, of course, as with John DeLorean, they'll frame you, as they did with DeLorean, by planting an agent provocateur to try to get him to actually take illegal money. And they blocked DeLorean at every turn, so he couldn't borrow money any place in the world. They wanted to put him out of business. The FBI conspired against an American citizen who had a plant over in Ireland. And they did it because Margaret Thatcher had asked the American government to put DeLorean out of business because he was paying wages to the Irish, and some of that money was going into the Irish Republican Army, the IRA. And, of course, so they went after DeLorean, and, of course, they destroyed DeLorean, as they will with anybody. We need a free enterprise system, and we need an honest government, not one that favors one group over another. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, you mentioned DeLorean, and I haven't heard that story in a long time, so I thank you for refreshing my memory on DeLorean. And what you... Was that in the 80s? Or?
I think it was. It's been a long time. We actually had the opportunity to interview the fellow who broke the case and, of course, exposed the fact that the FBI was conspiring intentionally and was lying and creating a false evidence, and DeLorean got off scot-free. Somebody at our producer is just commenting that a 20 to 30% tariff would be deflationary, be counterproductive, certainly it might very well be, but it would save the industrial base of this country. And we're going to have to do something if we want to save the industrial base, because if we do not save the industrial base, then America as we know it will simply become a remembrance of things past. And I think you're right, Melody. We are well down the road towards the point of no return. But at least we have to stop the hemorrhage. We have to try to save the patient. Because if we don't stop the hemorrhage, why, the patient's going to die. And if we do stop it, maybe things are going to get bad. And maybe he's going to end up terribly crippled, or maybe he's going to lose a leg, but at least we'll still have a live patient. Otherwise, the dream that was America will soon, I fear, become a nightmare. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question for Melody, if you'd like to discuss what's happening economically to our country, because I believe America is in real economic trouble. And as we see the real statistics coming out, the only way that our economy is surviving at all is that they're still continuing to pump out massive amounts of money. Now, not in the form of a currency, but putting it out in the form of credit and money that you can actually borrow. And about 10 or 11% at the present time, according to Bob Chapman. But many of the other countries, of course, at much higher rate than that. The whole world is on a binge. We have a great time. You know, there's all this money available. It's like if somebody, you know, were to give everybody in town a $10,000, they could have a great time spending it. But eventually, supply and demand would catch up with them. And, of course, the price of goods would rise. And then eventually, the value of all money would be destroyed. And that's what they're in the process of doing today. And that is why gold and silver are such important commodities, especially today. Well, Melody, are people really buying gold and silver much these days? The price seems to be down a little bit. Of course, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's a great buying opportunity. But what sort of response are you getting from your customers?
Well, you know, it's an incredible buying opportunity, like you said, and it's amazing because the long-term gold bugs are there. They'll always be there. They know the value of gold. They understand what's going on. Then you have another group of people because they fall into the emotional roller coaster of the gold and silver prices. We saw gold going to $720, $725. And then they whacked it down to $550, and it's coming back up, and it's been seesawing between around about $610 to $630, $640, and they just won't touch it. You know, they come up with a lot of excuses, and I hear it every day. Now, as soon as we get past this stage and we see prices rise again, I'll hear the same comments. I should have bought gold when it was at 600, or I was waiting for the price to fall even more. Or maybe they'll begin to buy the politician's statements that the economy really isn't that bad because the illusion of the stock market is still at 11.3. So maybe they think they'll wait, or they'll think about it. I mean, they come up with all tons of excuses in order not to, or maybe not excuses, but ideas in which they procrastinate into buying gold, even though they might believe that the dollar might be falling and gold is something that will protect them against a falling dollar. They have a tendency to wait. They don't take control of their finances. And they've also been conditioned by their stockbrokers and people who they take advice from, that they like to be told. And, you know, stockbrokers, they'll tell you where to place your money. They'll tell you where you want to go, what mutual fund, and so forth. All you have to do is give them your money. And when you buy gold, it's something where you have to make a conscious decision to say, I'm going to be different than everybody else. And I'm going to pull away from the herd. I'm going to pull away from the cycle of people that still have their funds in the market, and I'm going to do the opposite.
All right, let's go to Dave, who's calling us from Illinois. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Good evening. Good evening. Question and a comment.
All right.
First, a question.
Let's hope we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we have Dave calling us from Illinois. Dave, do you have a question and a comment?
Yeah, first I have a question, then I'll give the comment. The question is, I don't know if you two know this or not, they'd answer this question, but here locally in Illinois, the price of gas has dropped quite a bit. I wonder what's going on there. Why? I'm not complaining, but what's causing that? I'm really curious. I've heard no explanation as to what's causing the recent drop in the price of gas.
All right, so do you have any thoughts on that, Melody?
Where is the price of gasoline in your area?
Some stations down to $2.79, which is still way too high, but it's definitely lower than $3 a gallon.
Right. Well, we saw a little bit of rise in gasoline when the hurricane was approaching Florida. They didn't know whether it would be just a tropical storm. We saw the price of oil rise considerably, and it was up $72, so that had sort of an impact on it. I think you'll always see a fluctuation in gasoline. The gasoline around my area in central Pennsylvania is about $2.89. So You know.
Well, let me tell you, Dave, there is no shortage of oil. This is all contrived. The Saudi oil minister said there's no shortage of oil. I mean, they've got their ships laden down with oil. It's all being manipulated by the major oil companies. This whole scam up in Alaska where BP, British Petroleum, has suddenly found out that they had some leaks in their oil lines, and OSX was just going to have to shut everything down, the North Slope, for 4 or 5 or 6 months, and of course then they decided that maybe they'd only shut down half of it, and the whole thing, I think, was just coordinated to make money. And unfortunately, the truth of the matter is, oil companies, if they can convince people there's a shortage or even create an artificial shortage, why, of course, they can raise the prices. There's plenty of oil out there, but they are manipulating the prices, in my estimation. Anything else?
You know, a comment. You know, we talk about this idiotic stock market. My opinion is that since they own and run the printing presses, the New World Order crowd does, who own the Federal Reserve, since they own the printing presses, it seems to me they could just keep that stock market jacked up forever. It'd be a big lie, but they could keep it jacked up forever, and the American people would be pacified, and we could actually be in a recession, but if they don't talk about it, the average American doesn't know what's going on.
How would you respond to that, Melody? Dave is suggesting that certainly the one thing they can do, they have the printing presses, they can just keep printing money and drive the prices up on the stock market. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is you have a glut of dollars, is what we're seeing, and we're globalized. We talk about globalization, and we talk about the rest of the world, and you're right, the American people are dumbed down, but the rest of the world... there's no confidence in the dollar. When you have those many dollars continue to be printing, that creates inflation. That decreases the value of the dollar, meaning the price of gold will rise.
And, of course, the thing is, it's not simply that it's our own currency. Yeah. Now the dollar is being held by central banks and by people throughout the world. But as they see the value of their holdings going down, one of these days, these various countries are going to start dumping dollars. In fact, some of them are already beginning to dump dollars. When all of those trillions of dollars that are all throughout the world suddenly flood back into America, why, we're going to have a terrible mess here. And this is how currencies are destroyed. In fact, I would suggest that everything the Federal Reserve is doing, both under Paul Volcker and under Alan Greenspan and now under Bernanke, is intended upon ultimately destroying the value of the dollar. And as a result, of course, destroying the value of the savings of every person in America. And I'd suggest, if you haven't recently read the essay by Alan Greenspan that he wrote back in 1966, reread it, get it, and read it through 3 times. And then remember that Alan Greenspan recently was accosted by Congressman Ron Paul, who said, well, Mr. Greenspan, certainly you're going to disavow what you wrote in 1966 about gold being the only protection for wealth. And, of course, the welfare state wants to take away the public's ability to protect their wealth. And according to Ron Paul's press secretary, who I talked to, Alan Greenspan, said, Mr. Paul, I recently reread that essay. I would not change one word of it. If you don't have it, you can ask us. We'll send you one. Or actually, we have the complete essay in our coming tsunami of syllabus. It's so important to understand what these people are really thinking and what their plan is.
Well, I think one thing that they're trying to do, I think one plan they have, perhaps, is that Team Bush may be, begging Bernanke to keep the stock market propped up through November to try to get the Republicans reelected. And they may succeed. They may keep it pumped up that long, but whether the plan will work, I don't know.
Now, what are your thoughts on that, Melody?
Well, I think I read a statement today that, if the Democrats can't replace the Republicans at this election this year, that you may as well vote in your family pet or something. But I think they'll do everything they can to show or to try to get the Republicans in office. I just can't imagine how they can do that. I mean, I think they're going to have to do something major. But yeah, the stock market is always an illusion that they want to keep going in order to you know,
maybe
keep
they
the people
can
happy.
Another tape of Osama bin Laden threatening George Bush, and you know, of course, that was one means by which Bush was able to win in 2004. Osama bin Laden conveniently came up with the tape, you know, immediately before the election. So I think we'll either have a terrorist attack or Osama bin Laden, or maybe we'll go to war with Iran, something like that, to rally the people behind the government. After all, you don't want to change horses in midstream, do you? That's how Kennedy got the Democrat Congress elected in 1962. They suddenly found those missiles that were in Cuba. There was a Cuban Missile Crisis. Isn't it interesting? They'd been around for many, many months. We've read about them in June or July. But it wasn't until late October, just before the November congressional elections, that Kennedy would have lost the House and the Senate at that time had it not been for the Cuban Missile Crisis. So they contrive these things all the time, Dave. It's just important that we are not taken in, although most people will be.
Yeah. Well, God help this country is all I can say.
I don't know why God should want to help this country. but, of course, our job is to get the people informed and perhaps to get them to turn back to God. That is the only hope for America.
Thanks a lot.
God bless. Thanks so much for calling, Dave. And, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But before we go on, Melody, I want you to get your telephone number and your website out there.
The number here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading is 1-800-375-4188. And again, that phone number is 1-800-375-4188. And on my website, I do, Ron Paul did a, before the U.S. House of Representatives back in April of this year, what the price of gold is telling us. And it is posted on the website. It's about 11 pages long. It's a great article, so if you have access to the website, please go there and read his article if you haven't done so already. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And again, that is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
Okay, if they can't remember that, could they go up on Google and type in your name and come up with it?
Most likely.
Now, how do you spell your last name? I know how, but I want you to tell the people.
It's Cedarstrom, Cedarstrom, Melody Cedarstrom.
All right, fine. And so Melody Cedarstrom and that is a great article by Ron Paul. In fact, most of the material he puts out is really priceless.
Yes, it is.
And you have to understand that the currency really has no value. They simply can print all of this they want to, but it's not simply the currency. This is one of the mistaken precepts they have. They can also create bank entries. They can create credit. They can create all sorts of monetary increments that have nothing to do with currency that you can hold in the palm of your hand. And they have about 10 times as much credit as they actually have a currency out there, actually much more than that right now. We're probably pushing close to $12 trillion in the M3, but of course they won't even let us know what they're doing with the M3 because they do not want the American people to know that they are intentionally trashing and destroying and shredding the value of American currency.
You know, if a person doesn't understand what their final goal is and what the final objective that they have, it's difficult to understand that they will want the market to collapse in their time. And you're right, you think that, well, you know, they have printing presses and they can just throw the dollars at it all the time. But you got to remember, this is the word globalization, and they do, in my view, and from what I've read and from what I understand, they, you know, that's why they call it a one world order. You know, they do want a one world government and monetary system and you know, everything else that goes along with it. And when you understand that, there will come a time, and it's probably not in the too distant future, that they will allow, I mean, they do control it. And they will allow these things to fall and to collapse in order to get everybody on the same level. You know, we all have to be downgraded to the same level, to that third world status. And
that's I think that's what's so hard for the average individual to believe that this could be the plan of Americans. But it's really not the plan of Americans. It is the plan of the former dictator of Russia, a multi-billionaire from Canada who currently is hiding out in China because he would, if he were to come back, he would be indicted for trading with Saddam Hussein during the time of the oil for, what was it, dollars or whatever it was. He was involved in that. That was Maurice Strong, of course. And the only American is the son of that great patriotic American family, the Rockefeller family, Stephen Rockefeller. They wrote the Earth Charter where they talk about equitable distribution of wealth between nations. What are they talking about? They're talking about your wealth. Believe me, not their wealth. And if you incidentally haven't read the Earth Charter, it's available up on the Internet. You can Google it in if you can't find it. Of course, we have it in our several syllabuses. I think we have a copy of it in our Sustainable Development syllabus. I know it's in the coming Synonymy syllabus. And, of course, if you aren't in a position to get the syllabuses, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And if you can't find it on the Internet yourself, why, we'll be glad to send you a free copy of the Earth Charter, which is the Mein Kampf of the occult hierarchy that rules the world for America, for all of humanity. It's called the Earth Charter. Read it, understand what they're talking about, an entirely new spirituality and the destruction of existing societies. We know it. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly at the present time, why, the stock market looks not too bad. It goes up for a couple of days. It goes down for a couple of days. And it is obviously manipulated by what they refer to as the plunge protection team, which was established during the Reagan administration to prevent the stock market from collapsing and creating all sorts of psychological problems for our people, because when the market begins to collapse, then it begins to feed on itself, and more people begin to sell, and then there are no buyers, and then the market falls even more. So if you can manipulate the market, they would call it smoothing it out and making it work more efficiently. But it's really, if you and I were to manipulate the market, we'd go to prison. When the government do is that they say it's in the name of the public interest. But believe me, the people who are doing this know exactly what's going to happen. And they know when to invest and when to not invest in the stock. And you see very, very few poor people on the Federal Reserve Board or working for the United States Treasury. And I can tell you that Mr. Paulson, who's the new Secretary of the Treasury, gave up a job that paid $40 million a year. That's $40 million a year for a job that only pays him $185,000 a year. What a really idealistic man to give up such a high-paying job for a measly $185,000 a year, unless, of course, he's going to make a lot more money for himself and his firm, Goldman Sachs, by being the Secretary of the Treasury. What are your thoughts on that, Melody?
Well, you're absolutely right, if one didn't believe that the stock market was manipulated in any fact, you'd have to ask yourself, why do you have how many television stations that have 24 hours, 24/7 financial news programs? And every one of those programs that people hear day in and day out, that's all manipulation. That's all to keep the market manipulated and keep it up. And again, it's a security. It makes people feel good. And
I think this is so interesting. On CNN, if you ever watch CNN, they have these two bands going across the bottom of the screen at the same time, but at different speeds, telling you different things. It almost is like hypnosis. And you're sitting there trying to read what those things are saying and trying to take it in. They go so rapidly. You have to totally focus your attention. It is a technique that is used by hypnotists to control people's reality. I guess that's MSNBC, I think, is the one that does that.
And, well, you know, you have the same thing with Bloomberg and everything else. They have so many different screens with everything changing, with new information coming in and coming out. So it is all a form of hypnosis, and it will continue as long as they will, or there's some sort of outside influence that will change. They do lose control, and they can lose control. And also what people have to remember is the purchasing power of gold goes up not because it's a great investment. We always talk about it's a great investment. We should change the wording there, but gold goes up in value only because the paper currency goes down in value. And it's almost like on the old seesaw that, with the gold, the dollar going down and gold goes up, gold goes down and the dollar goes up. So you really can't go wrong in purchasing gold.
Well, you just want something that really is currency insurance more than anything else. If you make money, fine, but it's mainly just to be able to protect what you have, and that's the important thing. Melody, I want you to get your telephone number and your web page up one more time.
The phone number here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
And, of course, if people call you, what's going to happen?
Well, what we do things a little bit different here at Discount. We take each client as an individual, and we do the portfolio based on the client's investment objectives and also the suitability of the different coins. And we don't do a one coin fits all to everyone. I believe there's some coins that perform, and I believe in building foundations.
I'll be right back. Okay, Melody, why don't you go right ahead? And you were just saying that one coin doesn't fit all, and that you try to tailor things to the individual.
We do. We do individual portfolios based on their suitability and their investment objectives. I don't believe in one coin fits all because everybody is different. Everybody has different budgets. Everybody believes that things will happen at different times. So that's how we gear the portfolio. There's rule of thumb that we go by. Of your hard assets, 80% should be in, of your hard assets, 30% should be in precious metals, and that should be a minimum of precious metals. In the times that we're approaching, it really should be anywhere from 30 to 50%, and that's truly a rule of thumb. I have many, many clients that have, 80 and 90% of their hard assets in gold and silver, but that's also an individual, an individual objective. We also, out of that 30%, 80% should be in gold, 20% should be in silver. I have clients say, well, what about palladium? What about platinum? Well, first you need to build your foundation. You need to get the basics, and then you can begin to speculate and perhaps pick up some other metals. You can try palladium, platinum at this point in time. I think it's a little too high to purchase. Yet I know there's some firms out there that push the date sets of platinum, and I would say stay away from those. If you have platinum, it'd probably be a good time to sell it and purchase either pick up some other silver metal or even some gold at the prices where they're all at very good prices at this point in time. So that's how we do portfolios. We do things a little bit differently. It takes a little bit longer for us, but when the client is finished with their portfolio, they understand the coins that they have, they understand how they perform, and they understand what to expect. And that's the right way of purchasing gold and silver.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate so much you being with us, Melody. We'll look forward to having you with us again next month. And thanks very much for being our guest this evening here at Radio Liberty.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God
bless. Good night.
All right, fine. Well, that was Melody Severstrom, and I hope you enjoyed our program with her. And, of course, we'll be back here in just a moment as we wrap up this program. And let me just mention, if you'd like to get my talk on the financial tsunami, we have it on a video, we have it on DVD, but you want to get the syllabus that goes with that. It has so much information that will help you understand what is really going on financially in the world today. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out across America and out across the world that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you listen to us and you believe that we have an important message and you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, we'd be glad to send it to you. I would suggest the May newsletter because it deals with immigration and it gives who is behind this immigration scam, who is behind the effort to bring literally millions of people into this country to change us from a homogeneous society into a multicultural, multilingual society. And why would anybody want to do that? Well, you need to get our May newsletter. Now, you can pull it down at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or, of course, you can go ahead and get that sent to you free of charge if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to understand more about finances, certainly the book The Creature from Jekyll Island goes into the background of the financial history of the United States and the Federal Reserve System. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island. We have an inexpensive little pamphlet. It's called The History of Money, a compilation of some of my newsletters on that subject. And then, of course, we carry The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton and Fiat Money, Inflation in France. And those four items, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The History of Money by Radio Liberty, the Federal Reserve Conspiracy and the Fiat Money Inflation in France, and three of those are really very short and easy to read. You will know more than most financial advisors. In fact, most financial advisors really can't be trusted. Let me give you the three rules for investing right now. Diversify, diversify, diversify. Do not put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, consider investing money overseas. Consider investing in other currencies, certainly gold and silver and gold stocks and silver stocks and these sort of things. We certainly think that you need to do that, but right now everything has to be defensive. There is a time to speculate in the market. There is a time to batten down the hatches, preparing for difficult times, and believe me, the storm clouds are right on the horizon. They're going to be here very, very soon. So, again, if you'd like to get my syllabus and or talk or both, and I recommend you get both, on the coming financial tsunami, the number is 1-800-544-8927. We do carry the Berkey products, Big Berkey, and of course, the Berkey Light. And, of course, you're interested in getting fluoride out of your water. You can get the special fluoride filters, an excellent means of purify your water. And, of course, it's also nice in times like these, and we're entering very dangerous times. I think it's only a matter of time before the United States finds an excuse to attack Iran. We're being conditioned to do that, and if you've not made your preparations for that, you need to, and you need to have a Berkey water filter, and you need to lay in a supply of alternative medications, especially those that can help you fight infections, because you may not be able to have ready access to antibiotics, and certainly the oil of oregano allobiotic, which is a combination of oil of oregano and garlic and elderberry juice. I think there are a couple of other things in it. I know we've taken it when we've had potential infections here. So go ahead and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to know about the Berkey products. If you'd like to know about the health products we carry, or consider laying in a stock of those. And you need to make all of your preparations because we live in very uncertain times, financially, economically, and, of course, spiritually. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com, where you can listen to us 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly, every single day. 4 hours a day on shortwave, 9 hours a day on Telstar 9 satellite, along with Joyce Riley and a couple of our friends. And we'll be back in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course we'd hope to have Jim Fetzer on this evening to talk about 911, but we haven't been able to reach him, so for the time being, we're going to be just, it's going to be you and me. If you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I thought what we'd talk about this evening is what we're going to talk to the professor, Jim Fetzer, about. And that is what really happened on 9-1-1. Because, you see, since then, we've gone to war with Iraq. We've gone to war with Afghanistan. We're preparing to go to war with Iran. They are taking away our freedom here at home. We're having to stand in long lines in the airports. We're having to stand in long lines before government buildings. We're having to accept increasing surveillance of our telephone calls, of our faxes, of our emails. We're going to have to accept increasing monitoring of our financial records. Everything is being evaluated by the government in the name of fighting terrorism. And step by step, we're losing our freedom because of what happened on that Tuesday morning on the 11th of September, 2001. Now, the question is, do we really know what happened that morning? We know what we saw. We know what we think happened, but are we really certain what happened? And especially as time goes by and more information becomes available, we begin increasingly to raise the question in our mind, have we been told the truth? Well, fortunately, we have Jim Fetzer on the line with us, and Jim is certainly one of the leaders of this effort to try to get the truth out about what happened. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight, Jim.
Oh, Stan, it's a great pleasure to be back on with you again.
Well, now let's get your view on what happened that morning. Certainly, there are a number of conspiracy theories. One of them is, of course, that 19 hijackers, 15 of them from Saudi Arabia, hijacked four planes and crashed them into buildings. And that is what happened that day. At least three of them went into buildings, and of course, one of them was shot, taken over by the passengers and then crashed in a field in Pennsylvania. That is what we're told happened. That is a conspiracy theory. Certainly it was a conspiracy, and it's a theory, but there are other theories, aren't there?
Well, not only that, Stan, but this is a particularly outrageous one. We've been able to disprove essentially every basic element to the government's position. The buildings were designed to withstand the impact of jet airliners comparable in size and mass and fuel capacity to those that actually hit the building. The steel was capable of withstanding much higher pressures, temperatures than it was subjected to for much longer periods of time, so the steel neither weakened nor did it melt. Plus, buildings of that kind of design, reinforced steel structure, welded buildings, especially with 47 core columns and sophisticated load redistribution capabilities, are not capable of a pancake collapse. That would require the simultaneous failure of all of its support columns. It's the kind of thing that the government couldn't claim would have happened here. It didn't happen here. The whole thing is a charade.
All right, fine. Well, of course, that's pretty strong talking. Yet, of course, if you look at what happened that morning, those buildings fell just about the speed of gravity. But the one thing nobody ever wants to ask is, why did Building 7 come down that morning? So you pick up the story there, Jim.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Building 7 wasn't hit by any airplane, had no jet fuel fires. It had a couple of very modest fires. It was a 47-story building. It was well away from World Trade Center 1 and 2, and yet at 5:20 in the afternoon, this is like 7 hours later, it inexplicably collapsed, except that we have on a videotape an interview with Larry Silverstein, who had leased the buildings and had insured them for $3.5 billion against terrorist attacks just 6 weeks before 9/11. Who's talking with somebody he knows as the fire commander, and the hesitation there suggests to me he knew this guy under a different designation as well, saying, since there's been so much death and destruction, perhaps the best thing to do is simply pull it. He says they made the decision to pull, and they watched the building come down. Now, that's a demolition term for pulling down a building with explosives. Persons on the scene at the time, like Dan Rather and Peter Jennings, said it looked just like a the kind of explosives you see in explosions you see in Las Vegas, where hotels and casinos are being blown up. And indeed, it was exactly like that. It was just that kind of an explosion. It was blown from the bottom. You see all the floors falling at the same time. They're falling at the same rate approximately as free fall. Or if you dropped an object off of the building and allowed it to fall only through air as its resistance, that would have taken 6 seconds. This building came down to 6.6. There's an interesting difference between the controlled demolition, which is a classic event involving Building 7, and what was happening with World Trade Center 1 and 2, because those buildings, all the floors are remaining stationary, but the buildings are blowing up from the top down, Stan. Judy Wood, as a mechanical engineer, has compared it to two trees that are turning to sawdust from the top down. Now, that huge cloud of smoke that's enveloping the buildings, it consists of the pulverized concrete that was used as a flooring material, also all the office furniture, desks, chairs, computers, and, of course, human parts that were turned into little tiny specks. All this, plus asbestos that was used in the building, and whatever explosives were bringing this about, is enveloping the building. Beams are being thrown out and even upward, some of them quite massive. There is no possible way to account for this on the government's official position. There's no source of energy that can bring about these effects.
I like to call it the government's conspiracy theory.
Yes, well, it is. It is, of course. It's only the most outrageous one and the most easily shown to be false.
Well, I think that the implications of this are really frightening, because if this was buildings were not bought down by Islamic terrorists, it suggests that some people within our government or within our intelligence agencies are complicit. And a lot of people say, I cannot believe that George Bush did this. And I don't think anybody is suggesting George Bush did it, but he's certainly covering, at least at the present time, for those who did.
Well, you know, Stan, I've been doing a lot of these talk shows.
Well, this is Arthur Stan, and our guest is Jim Fetzer. And Jim was saying that he's been doing a lot of talk shows. He is certainly one of the stars of the recent Alex Jones program, which was aired, I think, at least four times on C-SPAN nationwide, along with Webster Tarpley and Professor Stephen Jones and Lieutenant Commander Bob Bowman. This was really one of the, I think this may have been a turning point for the nation, as people began to hear rational people explaining what happened that morning. You were just saying, Jim, that you'd been on a number of talk shows, and what is what point you wanted to make?
Well, the point I wanted to make is a lot of the hosts of these shows are discovering that the audience is not responding to their suggestions. I was on Jerry Springer just a couple weeks ago. And after I was on the first hour, and he frequently cut me off, but I was able to make a lot of points, suggesting that it might be worthwhile for him to allow me to actually explain some of these things. He took a lot of callers, and then he conducted a poll. He had five different questions, Stan, and the first question was, he deliberately contrived it to make it the most negative sounding he could. Did George Bush murder 3,000 Americans on 9/11 to promote his own political agenda? 64% of his callers answered yes, Stan.
Well, I think, of course, that the way things work in the intelligence community is you never tell the president what you're going to do. He has to have plausible deniability. I think that George Bush knew something was going to happen. After all, he had told Condoleezza Rice, I don't want to keep on swatting flies. I want to go after Al-Qaeda and end them, in words to that effect. And, of course, Condoleezza Rice testified to that effect before the 911 Commission. So how was he going to justify going after Al-Qaeda? The average American didn't want to go after Al-Qaeda. I think instructions were given to the intelligence community, and they carried out an operation. But they would never tell the president what was going to happen. I think afterwards he realized that's why he didn't ever fire anybody when it happened. They were simply doing what they were supposed to, but George Bush did not know exactly what was going to happen. I don't think anybody could prove that. But, of course, we know that during the Iran-Contra hearings, that Poindexter said the president would love to have known what we were doing, but we could not tell him. He had to have plausible deniability. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right, Stan, except that, you know, when Andrew Card came into him and he was sitting at the Booker Elementary School in Sarasota, where I used to reside, telling him America was under attack, he did absolutely nothing. He sat there very blandly. That's a very odd reaction. A president of the United States ought to be immediately leaving the classroom, excusing himself, taking charge. He did none of those things.
You're absolutely right. I think he was probably scared to death. I don't think he's much of a leader. I don't think he's a courageous man at all. He suddenly realized the enormity of what was happening. I think he was terrified.
Well, it's also the case, Dan, that he observed that after the first plane hit the North Tower, that he thought that and said, man, that guy's really a terrible pilot. Now, that would have to have been before the second plane hit the South Tower.
No,
because after that happens, no one would imagine it was a mistake, which implies that he had access to video, probably through some closed-circuit channel, of which we know nothing.
I think you're probably right. But I think that, you know, certainly, all we can say is that it is his responsibility to hold those who are responsible to task, and he did not do that. In fact, he complimented George Tenet for a fine job done. And, of course, I think Tenet did exactly what he was supposed to. But I think that someday George Tenet and the other people involved in this are going to have to be brought before the bar of justice, because if we can't convince the American people what really happened, then I fear they're going to drag us into a war with Iran, and then a world war, and they're going to bring a total dictatorship here in America, which I think is exactly what the Bush administration wants, because I don't think they believe in the Constitution.
Yeah, well, the belief in the Constitution is certainly a bizarre thing with this administration. These excess of 750 signing statements, for example, in which he presumes unto himself the functions of the legislature and the judiciary, clearly is a manifestation of an American-style dictatorship. We have to pay attention to these things. And as I imagine you're well aware, Stan, the staff members reported earlier on that when Bush was told that some of the options he wanted to consider would violate the Constitution, he responded by saying, "That's just a goddamn piece of paper." Rather shocking. I'm quoting the President of the United States, according to members of his own staff.
Well, maybe someday I'll tell you about my experience when we met George Bush, but under any circumstances, let's stick pretty much with what happened on 9/11. But, you know, the thing is that, of course, we saw the Twin Towers come down. Immediately we were told that it was the work of Osama bin Laden, and I don't know how many of our listeners remember that morning, but they kept showing over and over that morning pictures of little Palestinian or Arab or Muslim children. I don't know what they were, but they showed that same clip over and over again, the children celebrating the coming down of the Twin Towers. They were so happy about it. And I often wondered where they got that clip this morning, or this was something that they were holding back, you know, for just that time. And, you know, you could begin to see, as the day wore on, that the whole thing was orchestrated to generate an emotional response on the American people. Even the way that the pictures were taken and the music in the background, it was all orchestrated like there was an orchestrator leader orchestrating this whole scenario. It was a great television production, and almost 3,000 Americans died that day.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking.
And of course, it's
on the order, Stan, of course, of the number of deaths that occurred at Pearl Harbor. And when we read the Project for the New American Century and its Rebuilding American Defenses document, it's talking about how the American people are going to be unlikely to support an American empire, all the fantastic financial expense that would be involved in the personal sacrifice, the lives of sons and daughters, unless there were some catalytic traumatizing events that convinced them that they were under attack by some outside force. So that, in fact, it appears very clear, they even use the language of what they need is an event like a new Pearl Harbor. And, of course, Zbigniew Brzezinski, in his book, The Grand Chessboard, had written exactly the same scenario, even used virtually the same language, talking about the need for a new Pearl Harbor in his book, The Grand Chessboard, published in 1997.
Yeah, I think that there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that they were looking for an issue, an event, to justify the attack, first of all, on Afghanistan, secondly, on Iraq, and, of course, third, on Iran and the rest of the Muslim world. And what's really so interesting, certainly we have a great deal of evidence that's been worked on a plan for some time, and the most amazing coincidence, it just happened to be on the president's desk on the morning of September 11th, exactly the plan that Richard Clark had written up in January of that year and given to Condoleezza Rice, which involved financing the Northern Alliance, sending special forces groups supported by air power into Afghanistan, and that's exactly what we did. I think it's the most amazing thing having no idea this attack was coming. It was just, I think, what, something like 20 or 21 days after the 9-1-1 attack that we actually had forces on the ground in Afghanistan. It takes a long time to plan a military operation, but I think it was October the 7th, or 3rd or 7th, certainly far less than a month, that we actually had forces in Afghanistan. How could they have done that and had the logistical supply for those people if they hadn't been planning on an attack on Afghanistan before the 9-1-1 attack?
Oh, you're absolutely right, Stan. Of course, the so-called Downing Street memos that emerged from Bush visits with Tony Blair revealed that, in fact, the decision had already been made to attack Iraq and so forth, and that they were just fixing the intelligence around the policy. We know that all these things were going on, and that even, for example, the Patriot Act had clearly been drafted long before and then was rushed through the Congress in intimidating the members from even reading the document. You may recall how Tom Daschle, for example, received an anthrax letter when Daschle and the chairman of the Judiciary Committee were proposing that they actually hold hearings to decide whether or not the Patriot Act was a good idea. They make that proposal, and the next thing you know, this anthrax is showing up in the mail. Anthrax of a very high military grade, by the way, Stan, that can only have come from one or two places in the world, in which very clearly in this case appears to have come from Fort Detrick, Maryland. If anyone wanted to know where that anthrax came from, it would be very easy to discover it, and it appears to be known, but this government, you know, I mean, this is another indication of the government's own complicity in terrorist acts. That was another terrorist act, and it appears to have been perpetrated by the government itself.
But, you know, the government knew the attack was coming, because on the very evening of the September 11th attack, Vice President Dick Cheney and the entire White House staff, and we assume the president, started taking Cipro. Now, why would anybody take a potentially dangerous antibiotic? Because it weakens the tendons, you know, and you can't have complications from Cipro. Why would you begin taking that on the evening of the terrorist attack that destroyed, you know, the Twin Towers and Building Number 7 and certainly put a big hole in the Pentagon? Why would you even think about anthrax unless you knew it was going to come?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Stan. I mean, a lot of weird things going on here, and they're weird things that are inexplicable unless you assume that, in fact, the government had some role. I mean, like, why would George Bush and Dick Cheney forestall and thwart having an investigation into the events of 9/11 until political pressures overwhelm them, and they have no alternative because of the pressures brought by the families of the survivors of those events themselves? And then when they do so, they try to put it under control of Henry Kissinger, who's a great guy if you want to bury information, but not if you want to reveal it. When Kissinger's unwilling to disclose all of his financial entanglements, they turn to a guy named Philip Zelikow, who came from the inner sanctum of the Bush administration. He'd been responsible for supervising the transition of the national security apparatus from Clinton to Bush. And get this, he's not a scientist, he's not an historian. And it turns out he's a professional and expert at the creation and manipulation of political myths.
And, of course, I think it's not simply by accident that Philip Zelikow was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, Tom Keene, and Lee Hamilton were both members of the Council on Foreign Relations, Jeannie Gorlick, John Lehman. Four of the TED members came from the CFR, as did the administrator, Philip Zelikow. And is it then they had to go with one person on the commission, a name is Max, I've forgotten his last name, and he didn't want to go along with what he was being told, so they took him off the commission, because they had to have you now.
Oh, Max Cleland, yeah, Max Cleland from Georgia.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and that was Max Cleland, wasn't it?
Yeah. A war hero.
Have you read the new report that's out? The book is called Without Precedent. It's by Tom Keene and Lee Hamilton. And the whole purpose of the book is to tell you that we had to be thorough, we had to be fair, we had to bring out all the facts so the American people would know that there was no cover-up, there was no conspiracy. And, you know, I looked in the index, there's not one word about conspiracy, but they mentioned it about 8 to 10 places there. All these crazy people who think that there was a conspiracy that day.
What's even worse than that, Stan, because that may have been their motivation, but it's certainly not what they accomplished, because they admit in the process that they were given a whole bunch of different stories by the Pentagon, that they can't get straight exactly what happened and why the coordination that normally would obtain between the FAA and NORAD was transgressed that day, so that things were massively confused. It's as though these terrorists somehow had privileged access to the most innermost secrets of the Bush administration and were able to cleverly plan their activities. In fact, we have found all kinds of indications that this whole business appears to have been fakery, smoke and mirrors. None of their names, for example, appear on any passenger manifest list.
You're talking about the terrorists.
Yeah, that's right. It's very strange. How can you couldn't then even get on a passenger plane without showing a photo ID. So how do you have four planes, two different airlines, and you have these 19 alleged terrorists getting on these planes and their names aren't on the manifest, so the stewardesses don't even know where they're sitting? I mean, give me a break. That's not even possible. They didn't have the training, Stan. They couldn't get a little Cessna up and down off the ground, much less fly a big commercial airliner. Just look at the cockpit of one of these planes, and you realize how overwhelming is the amount of training necessary in order to even figure out what all the dials and the buttons and the levers represent. And finding your way around in the world when you're up at 30,000 feet, finding a target like even the Twin Towers or the Pentagon. Hani Hunjer's instructor, he is alleged to have been the pilot who flew into the Pentagon, said he couldn't believe this, that he couldn't fly at all. Well, I think his instructor knew what he was talking about. This guy couldn't fly at all. We have a member of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, Neela Sagadavan, who has studied their flight training and concluded that they could not have flown those planes. We have another member who's a professor of computer science. He's been flying all over the country with different types of cell phones. And he discovers that above 2,000 feet and 230 miles an hour, it's very difficult to make cell phone connections. Above 8,000 feet, it's essentially impossible, and that those alleged cell phone calls could not have been made. They appear to have been faked or fabricated. Even a tape from Flight 93 that was introduced at the trial of Zacharias Moussaoui appears to be a fabrication. One of an astute observer wrote to me to point out that while it includes an alleged cockpit voice recording of the passengers discussing among themselves how they're going to use a drink cart to break down the cabin door, that cockpit voice recorders don't record voices in the passenger compartment. This is all a fraud, Stan. The government has been playing us for saps, and it's disgusting, and I object to it, and I repudiate it. And we're doing everything we can to bring the truth about all of this to the American people.
Well, you know, I think you're doing a fairly good job, because I think more and more people are aware that they have not been told the truth. And I think a significant number of people realize that the government lied about this, and if they would lie about this, then probably they're lying about many other things. And until we can actually convince them of what happened on 9/11, why there will be no possibility of avoiding a war with Iran. If we can get the American people in time, why, I think maybe we can begin to put so much pressure on them, they may find out that they may call a war and nobody comes. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Jim Fetzer. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Professor Jim Fetzer. And you were a professor of philosophy, weren't you?
That's right, Stan. For 35 years, I taught logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning. I turned 65 in December, and I retired this June in part to spend more time on all of these issues.
I think it's so vitally important, and I know that you're doing a very, very good job. And I think that all these people who are working with you, as more and more people, and especially some of these videos up there, and you can see them for nothing on the Internet, like Loose Change. I think that's a great one, or 9/11 planned destruction. They're available on Google. And you can just, in your own office, you can pull them down for nothing, watch them. And I think that when you get through watching them, there'll be no question in your mind that we have not been told the truth.
Stan, you make an excellent point. That Loose Change video, which is now in its second and a half incarnation, it went through a second edition, and now the second edition has been revised, but there's yet to be a more extensive revision, which will be called the final cut, has been downloaded nearly 10 million times off of the Internet for free. This is a phenomenon unlike any other in the history of the Internet. It's like C-SPAN. When C-SPAN broadcast the panel discussion from the American Scholars Conference held out in Los Angeles on the 24th and the 25th of June, when they broadcast it and then rebroadcast it, and altogether four or five times they broadcast it, turns out it was the most demanded video program that they've ever put out. It has legitimized public discussion about these issues, Stan. It's been like a tidal wave ever since. 9/11 has been very much in the air, very active, the subject of a whole lot of discussion that wasn't taking place before.
And I think of Chris's latest issue of Vanity Fair magazine in September, where they interview the major who is in charge of the war room there at NORAD, at least in New England. And, you know, of course, he talks about, you know, how there was supposed to be military exercises that day. And his comment was, gee, how could there be a hijacking now? They must have started the exercise early. There are all these military exercises. I've heard there were 3 different exercises. Some people say there are 15. It doesn't matter if there is 1 military exercise that day. And then somebody was planting false images on the radar screens to confuse the NORAD, or, of course, the ability, of course, to intercept the planes. Then obviously there was a conspiracy.
How could these alleged hijackers have done any of those things, Stan? I mean, this business about these, I take it there were at least 5 anti-terrorist drills going on that morning. Apparently Dick Cheney was in charge and coordinating them from a bunker beneath the White House. Norman Mineta happened to be there and observed a young aide coming up to Cheney and saying, "Sir, it's 50 miles out. Sir, it's 30 miles out. Sir, it's 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand?" And he said Cheney turned on him, nearly bit off his head, and said, "Of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything different?" The order had to be to not shoot the plane down. I mean, they knew these planes were being used as weapons. The obvious thing to do would have been to shoot it down. You lose the passengers in the plane, but you don't also lose the personnel and the property at the target. If the order had been to shoot it down, then the plane would have been shot down. The Pentagon has got to be the most heavily defended building in the world. So here Norman Mineta is actually observing the vice president issue a stand-down order. This is he testifies about this to the 9/11 commission, but somehow, like the collapse of Building 7, which wasn't hit by any aircraft and had no jet fuel fires, they somehow can't find their way to include that in their official report about what happened on 9/11.
Well, I think it was so interesting, though, that in the transcript for that day, you know, after Mineta makes the comment, you know, that he had heard this interchange between Cheney and some unknown officer, do the orders still stand? And Cheney says, of course they do. And somebody on the commission said, "Well, what were the orders?" And Mineta said, "I don't know." And, you know, they never tried to find out what those orders were.
Well, it's obvious, given the line of analysis I just gave, that the order had to be to not shoot down the plane. It can't have been anything else. They didn't shoot down the plane. The Pentagon is massively defended. If the order had been to shoot it down, it would have been shot down, but it wasn't shot down. It was allowed to proceed and hit the building.
Right,
evidently,
just
intentionally.
Whatever it was, anyway, let's go to somebody calling from Louisiana named Hart. Who is this calling?
Hartwell.
Hartwell. Okay, fine. Well, it's good to have you with us. Did you have a question for, or comment for our guest?
Yeah, a question and a comment. Y'all believe that the Twin Towers were brought down with demolition charges?
Yes.
Okay. U.S. Senator David Vitter had a town hall meeting here in Abbeville, Louisiana. I went to the meeting and I told Senator Vitter that the buildings were brought down with demolition charges, and I asked him to investigate it. And he told me that I dishonored the people that died on 9/11 by saying that the Twin Towers were brought down with demolition charges, and I was wondering what you all thought about it.
Well, I think it's a disgrace that he would say that. He obviously doesn't know what he's talking about. We've done objective scientific studies, and we've been able to prove that the government's account is false, and we're doing a very good job of piecing together exactly what happened. I think it's the greatest form of dishonor to the dead to not undertake a serious investigation to find out exactly how they died and why they died. We're trying to do that. We are honoring the dead. It is the senator and the administration who is doing the opposite.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Hart, I certainly agree with everything that Jim has said, but in an open discussion, where you have a crowd of people there who really don't know what the issues are and haven't done the investigation that Jim has, I would simply say, Senator, why did Building 7 come down, and how did 2 passports, the 9/11 Commission says there were 4 passports of the the terrorists that survived, but I always talk about the two of them. How did one of the passports get out of the pocket of the out of the terrorists, and then out of the flaming inferno of the plane, and they hit the North Tower, and then out of the flaming inferno of the North Tower, and float down and be found on the sidewalk a block and a half away from the North Tower? Could you explain that to me? And how did another passport survive the flaming inferno in Pennsylvania? And, of course, that was even posted on the FBI website. Ask them those questions, because those are the ones that they don't have any answers for. And they want to come back and say you're dishonoring the people who died. Say, Senator, you're dishonoring them because you are obviously covering up what happened. You will not even look at it objectively. Why did Building 7 come down? And I've asked that question many times, and people always want to talk about the Twin Towers. And I say, I don't want to talk about the Twin Towers. I want to talk about Building 7. And so stick to the things. Remember, we're trying. You're not going to influence a senator. You're going to influence the people in the audience. That's who you're playing to.
Well, I told Senator Vitter that I was telling him the truth, and the truth never dishonored anyone. I was telling him that, people were booing me so much, I don't even know if he heard me.
But you see, you asked the wrong question. So next time, ask about Building 7.
Well, I didn't ask him. I told him the Twin Towers were brought down with demolition charges, and I did ask him to investigate it.
All right, but see, that was your mistake. What you wanted to do was not tell him anything. Ask the question.
Well, I commend you for raising the issue in a forthright way. I realize that it was a hostile audience, and the senator wasn't going to be sympathetic, but I admire your courage in raising it. Stan's suggesting there might have been a different way to pose the issue if you'd focused on Building 7, but I think what you said was perfectly appropriate, and, you know, eventually that audience will realize that you are right and the senator was wrong.
Okay, thanks very much for calling, and good luck, and just hang in there, but learn how to deal with an audience that really has very little knowledge. That's our job.
May God bless you.
God you bless
thanks
you too.
Calling.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Professor Jim Fetzer, who's retired, spending full time trying to get the truth out, as we are, a night, 5 hours every day, all across America. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Professor Jim Fetzer. And what organization are you working with, and where can people go on the Internet to find good, reliable information?
Oh, thank you for asking, Stan. The organization is called Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and our website is st911.org. We have over 300 members. We have over 200 with research abilities. We have over 75 or 80 that actually have academic affiliations or the equivalent. We have some very distinguished members, including Bob Bowman, who used to be the director of the Star Wars program in Democratic and Republican administrations and has over 101 combat missions as a celebrated fighter pilot. David Ray Griffin, a distinguished Christian theologian, professor emeritus from Claremont Graduate School, has published over 30 books and now has, five. He has five new books on 9/11. Andreas von Bülow, a 35-year member of the German Parliament who was in charge of the German Department of Science and Technology and a former director of the German Secret Service. Stephen Jones, whom I mentioned, of course, professor of physics at Brigham Young University, who's done the most extensive work on the exact kind of demolitions that appear to have been involved in bringing down the World Trade Center. You can find a tremendous amount of information here. We have physicists, mechanical engineers, civil engineers, structural engineers, pilots, aeronautical engineers. Go to our website, st911.org, and you'll find a vast amount of information there, all kinds of studies, hundreds of studies. You'll find documentaries, you'll find videos, you'll find audio recaps of interviews that many of us have been giving, and you'll find the evidence that substantiates the sorts of things I've been saying on this and other programs.
We are really, it's so interesting, looking at some of those pictures of the buildings coming down. You can actually see the explosions, explosive material coming out a couple of floors below the level of the crumbling of the building.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Those are called spools, and the buildings come down so fast, and it's fascinating. The South Tower, the 9/11 Commission report even acknowledges, came down in 10 seconds. You can find that pointed out on page 305. The North Tower in about 11. Well, if you'd gone to the top of one of those buildings, and release some object into the air, like maybe a grand piano, then with only air resistance between it and the ground, it would have taken at least 12 seconds for the grand piano to hit the ground and then blow into pieces. These buildings are blowing up so fast that they come down faster than free fall. That's inconceivable without explosives. And in fact, there were massive pools of molten metal in the sub-basement level 3, 4, and 5 weeks later that required a tremendous amount of energy. There's no way the government can explain it. It has to have involved a very special kind of controlled demolition using extremely powerful explosives.
And, of course, when Mr. William Rodriguez had actually heard those, you know, in the North Tower before the plane hit the North Tower. And what's really so interesting, apparently, he testified before the 9/11 Commission, and then they sealed his testimony and the testimony of about 1,000 other people for 50 years because of privacy considerations. And I wonder if anybody's naive enough to really believe that they sealed all that information for privacy, because they didn't want to embarrass anybody by having their testimony come out.
Yeah,
but
we weren't
afraid to have a Condoleezza Rice's testimony come out, and of course, so much of what was said was simply all red herrings. The PDB, the Presidential Daily Briefing, August 6th, they make a big issue of bringing that out, but pointing out it didn't tell you the date. Yeah, so maybe they knew there was going to be a hijacking, but certainly it didn't tell you exactly the day and time it was going to occur, so how could you really do anything to protect people? And the logical thing would be, if you knew there was going to be a hijacking, you would think you would have reinforced the doors. You would have put air marshals onto the planes or National Guard people onto the planes. You would have warned the American people a hijacking was coming. You would have actually increased the monitoring, you know, of the people getting out of the planes. The FAA had only 20 names on their terrorist watch list. State Department had 60,000 names. But I think the only real thing that in this new book, Without Precedent, that's put out by Lee Hamilton and Tom Keene, was they admit here for the first time that the FAA had advanced knowledge that there was going to be hijackings, and those hijackings were going to involve planes that would be used as weapons. So, you know, that is the first time I ever heard them make that admission. Have you heard that any other place?
Well, of course, when Condoleezza Rice testified before Congress, they asked her the name of, some of the documents that Bush was allegedly briefed with, and one of them said about Osama bin Laden, the threatening, you know, was going to be attacking the United States. But the fact of the matter is, our own FBI now, Stan, acknowledges that they have no hard evidence that ties Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. And in the initial videotape that he released, which we know to be authentic, unlike the rest, he denied he had anything to do with 9/11 and pointed out that it's contrary to the tenets of Islam to murder innocent women and children. So they're really, I mean, our own FBI is acknowledging that there is no hard evidence that ties Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. Just as Bush recently was forced to acknowledge it, you know, when questioned by reporters, what did Saddam Hussein have to do with 9/11? And he sheepishly admitted nothing, which means that, you know, this whole business about these wars had been predicated on big lies that have been repeated over and over by Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and the whole bunch of them, just among the world's biggest liars.
Well, you see, the thing is that they wanted to go to war in the Middle East. It was planned long ago. They were beginning to practice these invasions back in 1995. And in 1996, Richard Haass, who's today the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, but in 1996, he was actually a research director at the CFR headquarters in New York City, and he gave a speech. Actually, he wrote an article for the Washington Post that talked about how, you know, when this war on terrorism, this is 1996, this war on terrorism is just going to drag on and on and on, and we're going to have to stand in long lines at airports, and we're going to have to stand in long lines in government buildings, and we're going to have to get used to lots more surveillance and giving up our freedom in this fight for terrorism. This is 1996. Op-ed article in the Washington Post that somehow disappeared from their records, but we got an article that was republished in Florida, so we have the in full text of the article. He was telling you everything going on today in 1996, 5 years before the 9/11 Commission. for the 911 attack. They knew everything was going on. Everything is scripted. That's the most amazing thing.
It's stunning, Stan, that there would even be, you know, an outline for this for the foreign policy that the United States has adopted, which includes this aggressive move into the Middle East, which is extenuated by the Israeli assault on Lebanon, which I'm glad to say didn't play out the way the Israelis had planned. I mean, Hezbollah, astonishingly enough, was able to fight them to a draw. I'd observed to my wife it was all going to depend upon whether Hezbollah had sophisticated anti-tank weapons. My impression now is they took out something on the order of 60 Israeli tanks and actually did fight them to a draw, which is a simply astonishing result. Hezbollah has performed many humanitarian missions on behalf of the people of Lebanon. They are giving $12,000 to every family that was affected by the Israeli attack. And you know, victims of Katrina just read in astonishment about Hezbollah is doing more for the victims of the Israeli attack than the American government is doing for them as the victims of Hurricane Katrina.
Well, of course, remember, Hezbollah has got to be getting funding from Iran. And everybody's forgotten who brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power back in 1979. That was
well, remember, of course, I mean, we have been manipulating, you know, these governments in the Middle East practically forever. I mean, the British in World War, at the end of World War One, and, you know, at other periods of time have had a vast influence here in creating artificial states, like Iraq was really created artificially out of different segments of historically independent areas, which is probably the reason why it needed to have a very strong man to hold it together. It was like Tito in Yugoslavia. Once Tito's out of there, things start to fall apart and he's turned into a bunch of little tiny states. I predict that what's going to happen here in Iraq is we're going to wind up with three different states. There's going to be a Kurdish state, there's going to be a Sunni state, and there's going to be a Shia state, a Sunni, and a Kurd.
Yeah. And I think that that would be a logical thing to do. They never should have tried to force it all together, and I think the British did that intentionally after the First World War because they wanted an unstable situation there so they could play one dictatorship against another.
Yes, yes, that's right, that's right. But these days are past, you know. I mean, the idea the United States could create this this worldwide empire was just a fantasy, and it's not happening, and the idea that we might attack Iran, if we do that, it's going to be the greatest military disaster in American history. We're already recording Iraq as having that status. Clearly, they're in a civil war. The fact we have a puppet government and they're going to parrot whatever the American government wants them to say means absolutely nothing. I think the American people are completely and totally disillusioned with this administration. It's been lie after lie after lie after lie about everything, from tax cuts for the rich to global warming to reasons for going to war in Iraq to what actually happened on 9/11. It's completely disgusting, Stan, completely disgusting.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, but I think that they're determined to go to war with Iran. You can see how they're using the mass media to convince us of, oh, how terrible the Iranians are. And of course, as I see, President Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, he looks to me like he's somebody that came from central casting. He was cast there, you know, to read his script and to justify, of course, this is the man we're supposed to hate today. Instead of having a little mustache like Adolf Hitler, he has this sort of scruffy beard that looks like he just, you know, never get around to shaving for a few weeks. And then he's a very, very clever man, but he certainly is the sort of man we could really grow to hate.
Well, especially if we demonize him. I mean, he actually made a statement here today, I think, that he was inviting, challenging George Bush to a debate, which, of course, would be quite a farcical episode, since Bush is incapable of stringing together two coherent sentences on his own. I mean, it's embarrassing that this man was ever to occupy the office of presidency. It's completely irresponsible that a major political party would ever have nominated a person of his mediocre ability for that office. Shocking.
But I think you have to, of course, I have much more of a conspiratorial view than you do. I believe he was actually put in there to totally discredit our form of government. I mean, I had an opportunity of meeting with this man. I don't know whether I told you, Jim, but I was part of the group of Christian leaders, I'm ashamed to say, that picked George Bush for the Republican nomination in 1999. And there's some very good friends of mine and people who really love this country, really felt that if we could get a Christian leader into power, we could change America and straighten out the Supreme Court and all of these things. And so we held a series of meetings, and of course, in the last time, we actually interviewed Pat Buchanan and George Bush. And, it was the most incredible thing to realize that this man was really totally incoherent. He could answer a fixed question. In other words, if you asked him, what he thought about raising taxes or what he felt about education, he had an answer. Well, one of my friends asked him if he was presented a bill by Congress that was unconstitutional and it dealt with education or farming, would he sign it? And George Bush just sat there. He hadn't been primed. He didn't know the answer. Seriously, this is what happened. And he said, I don't understand the question. So my friend clarified the question and said, well, this is a bill. It deals with education. It's unconstitutional. Would you sign an unconstitutional bill? And Bush sat there for a minute. And he said, I'm going to have to think about that. I'm going to have to go home and think about that. I'm really not certain.
He doesn't understand he was going to take an oath of office if he were elected to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. He doesn't understand that?
This is the most incredible exchange. Well, I have a little different memory than my friend does of that. He wrote about it in his book. But I remember Bush saying, I really don't understand the question. Now, they wouldn't allow us to record the interview. And after this had happened, and I and my friend were standing together, why, George Bush came up to us and said, that was a very, very good question. I'm really going to have to go home and study more about that. And my friend,
it's analogous to who was buried in Grant's tomb, Stan.
And what a tragedy to think that this man is the president, but they could not have put him in there. They knew exactly what they were doing. He was picked by Kissinger and Schultz and others, and I really think he's put in there to be an embarrassment to America. And people throughout the world look at him, and they laugh, and they ridicule him. And he's generating hatred throughout the Islamic world, throughout the entire world for our country, and I resent that.
Yeah, I resent it too. And he's done more to weaken us and to make us vulnerable to terrorism. I mean, everything he's doing is weakening us. He's run up the most massive deficits in American history with, untold billions are being spent off of the books that we don't know about. In fact, there are estimates now that this war in Iraq is going to run well in excess of $1 trillion. Well, that's something they never told us, along with telling us how we were going to be greeted as liberators and flowers were going to be strewn in our paths. They never told us it was going to run $1 trillion. Also, it's weakening the American military. This rotation of troops in and out is breaking the Army, general after general, including commanders of the National Guard, are explaining how our military is being vastly weakened, not strengthened by this prolonged combat. And in the third place, our moral standing has been completely trashed by all of these lawless interventions, violations of international law, the UN Charter, our own Constitution, by taking these preventative wars, the same rationale for which was that Hirohito offered when he attacked the United States in Pearl Harbor. So if 7 December 1941 was a day that will live in infamy, so too will our attacks on Iraq. I mean, this is completely outrageous, especially when you consider the man claims he's the security president. Our security is built on three foundations: financial security, military security, and moral standing. He has trashed all three. We're now perceived as the biggest bully in the block. Instead of being the most admired and respected nation in the world, we're the most despised and reviled. It's tragic, Stan, and it's happened so fast.
Well, I certainly agree with what you're saying, and I share your concern, and I really get very, very concerned for the survival of this nation as a sovereign nation, because I think that there are people who have a different agenda, and I personally believe that George Bush has an entirely different view of what needs to be done than I would, or that I think that the average American would. I don't think he's concerned about our sovereignty, our integrity, our financial stability. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, or perhaps he's just doing exactly what Dick Cheney tells him, because I personally believe that Dick Cheney is the driving force behind what's going on in the White House, and I believe that in many ways George Bush is simply a script reader and not even a very good one at that.
Yeah. I think you're completely right. I mean, further evidence that he doesn't care about our security includes trying to bring this United Arab Emirates company in these Dubai ports to take control of our ports. I mean, if everything he's been telling us about the threat from Arab terrorism is true, that's an absurd idea. he's also defunded, you know, anti-terrorist planning for New York City and Washington, D.C. He's surely the two most prominent sites. And now, Stan, we have to talk about the NAFTA superhighway and the North American Union concept, which is going to turn this country inside out, destroy our national sovereignty, and violate states' rights.
And, of course, as our boys go overseas to fight for freedom, while we're losing our freedom, we're losing our sovereignty, we're losing our nation here at home. We'll be back here in just a moment with Jim Fetzer to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jim, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Stan, a nonpartisan group of independent scholars and experts has been studying the official account of 9/11, and we have discovered that it's just fine as long as you're willing to believe impossible things. The government's account of what happened in New York City to the World Trade Center violates laws of physics and engineering that, alas, cannot be violated and cannot be changed. The Building 7 came down without having been hit by any airplane, had no jet fuel fires. It was a classic controlled demolition that was proposed by Larry Silverstein, who had leased the World Trade Center and insured it up to $3.5 billion against terrorist attack. There's an awful lot of money to be made in wars. There's an awful lot of benefits to come from subverting the Constitution and turning America into a police state. Trying to create an imperial presidency appears to have been part and parcel of the plan, passing the Patriot Act, putting the country under this kind of surveillance, which is most unlikely to turn up any terrorist cells, but is very likely to enable you to identify your political opponents and how they are related with other Americans. It's a violation of our civil liberties. We should never be willing to surrender. Events in the Pentagon are very peculiar, where we even have a direct witness testimony from Norman Mineta, our Secretary of Transportation, that Dick Cheney's given what had to be a stand-down order to not shoot down the plane that approached the Pentagon. When I went on Hannity and Combs and made that point on the 22nd of June, Stan, by God, the next morning, Norman Mineta retired unexpectedly from government. I believe the reason was, as a retired former official, he wouldn't have to respond to reporters' questions that might very well have been expected to ensue. They, like others who are trying to cover these things up, were not interested in whether it was true that the buildings had come down by controlled demolition, whether it was true that Cheney had given a stand-down order, whether it was true that the FBI has asserted it has no hard evidence to connect Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. Well, I think the American people are entitled to know the truth, and we are doing our very best to bring it to them, and anyone who wants to pursue these issues should go to our website at st911.org. And I want to thank you, Stan, for giving me this opportunity to discuss this with you and with the American people.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to having you on our other programs. I think you have a great deal to offer, and you're a very, very articulate spokesman. And it's great when we can be on the same side, both trying to save this country, which we both love.
Yes, we do, Stan. We absolutely do. As a former Marine Corps officer, I care about my country. As a former philosopher, I care about truth. And as a philosopher of science, I care about science. That's what we need to find out. Use science to discover the truth about our country to save this great nation.
Amen to that. God bless. We'll talk to you, I think, later this week or next week.
My great pleasure, Stan. Anytime.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Professor Jim Fetzer, always a very articulate individual, and I think everything he said tonight is exactly true. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I really need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you, of course, if you would like to help us, or you feel that you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you would like to, of course, learn more about my ministry, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like to understand what really happened on 9/11, we actually are carrying a video. It's called In Plain Sight. It was put out by Joyce Riley's husband, and it's called In Plain Sight. We have a four-tape set called 9/11 Update, and we have, of course, the initial 9/11 four-tape set. We have a video that was produced by our good friend David Wagner, entitled "The Day That Changed the World Forever." The Day That Changed the World Forever, and he has a lot of clips there you will never see elsewhere. You'll see the president of Canada saying this war will go on forever. You'll hear Gary Hart, Senator Gary Hart, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, addressing a meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations 2 days after the 9/11 attack, saying this incident may give the president the ability to carry out what his father had discussed, I think only once, and that is to bring about a new world order. An emergency meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations. All of these film clips are there, and you'll see the buildings come down, and you'll understand that we haven't been told the truth. You'll see the firefighters saying, yeah, we could hear the explosions in the buildings. We could hear the explosions in the buildings. Clap, 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 clap. The explosions going off. There's no question what happened that day. And this is a video that's very seldom seen. The day that changed the world forever. And then, of course, we carry the book, The Terror Timeline by Paul Thompson. We have, of course, a 2 hours interviews with Paul Thompson of the Terror Timeline, and that, of course, is in the 9/11 update. We actually have the book, The Cover-Up by Dr. Dennis Cuddy, The War on Terror, written immediately after the attack. A great deal of great information in there. And certainly you want to get the material that we have written. We've actually put together 3 pamphlets, which comprise my newsletters. Foreknowledge 9/11 Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. And it's a great source of information. But I think if you really want to know what's going on, you need to get a couple of books we carry that other people don't carry. One of them is called The Devil's Game. And it traces the origin of this whole Islamic terrorist movement back to 1870, when it started to be financed by British intelligence, and then up through the Second World War, when American intelligence financed this whole world terrorist movement. And it's being financed today. And certainly, we carry another book called See No Evil. It's written by Robert Baer, and it was the basis of the book, the basis of George Clooney's movie, Syriana. The book, in the preface, has a quotation from one of the highest-ranking CIA officials who said, "After the dust settles, the American people will realize that what happened on 9/11 was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph." We carry the book. You need to get it. You will never hear that quotation anyplace, and nobody ever asked who the high-ranking CIA official was. That what happened 9/11 was a triumph and 3,000 Americans were dead? How could that be a triumph unless, of course, they wanted they were serving a different master. And what they really wanted was to drag us into a war with Afghanistan, a war with Iraq, and then a war with Iran, and then a World War III. And I would like to suggest there is a cosmic script. All the actors are in place, President Ahmadinejad, George Bush. It'd almost be humorous if it weren't so potentially deadly. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
There are many people asking questions. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is Tuesday, the 29th. Oh, I got my echo thing on there. 29th.
Don't tell your secret.
Shh, shh, shh. Okay, it's the 29th of August, 2006. Lots of folks getting ready.